shores of El Pacifico. Phil Hendrick.
I tell you what, if I lived in Massachusetts, I'd try to vote 10 times.
It is an honor to be here in a room full of what I consider to be the most important people on the planet.
In some circles, the president's been criticized for politicizing this disaster.
This is a fun party, and it's great, but, you know, there's a pressing matter in hand. And
Jews are good with money.
I was born of a whore and bred as an assassin.
World-famous Phil Henry Show here every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. The only news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and a show that'll take you through the looking glass, not only of the news, but of reality, and tell you more about, perhaps, yourself than the average talk radio show. All of that stuff will be made very clear to you as you listen to our program, and we welcome on to our Phil Henry Network tonight, and we're very, very remiss. Not really remiss, but we're a bit tardy. But in welcoming a bunch of great stations, new affiliates all, to the Phil Henry Show in Dallas, we have KFXR, and that is in Dallas-Fort Worth. We've got in Richmond, WLEE, Raleigh-Durham, WPTF, Greensboro-Winston-Salem, WSJS, Wichita, we're back on in Wichita at KQAM, in Pensacola, WPNN, and in Miami tonight live, back on in Miami nightly on Waxy 790 AM. Last night, the Golden Globes were a big hit. Will a Republican be elected senator from Massachusetts? Do you care? And also, of course, the Haitian disaster. And all of that stuff is going to be talked about not only by myself. We have Margaret Gray on, who is, the author of Little Bird Told Me, and she'll be with us, as well as Bob Green, who is the CEO of Fraser Foods, to talk about Haiti relief. The first thing I should do tonight, for those of you who are new listeners, and for those of you who are longtime listeners, is tell you that we have been out a little bit longer than we thought for the holiday break. We usually take between Christmas and New Year's off. And this year, we took Christmas until last Friday off. And what happened was simply this, and I tried to stay in touch with my audience, with you guys as much as I could on Facebook and Twitter. And I know Rance and Bud, were you?
Yeah, I went over a couple of times and I tweeted about it.
About what? About me having it?
Yeah, about pneumonia.
Pneumonia.
About your pneumonia.
Pneumonia, not ammonia. What happened was this. Never mind. What happened was this. So we got done with the show on the 23rd. We were about ready to break for the holidays. We had just gotten done doing the Phil Henry Carol, the Christmas Carol show. So I get off the air, and I noticed my throat's a little scratchy. I'm like, well, maybe, I don't know, maybe I strained my voice when I was doing that last hour, that last Phil Henry Christmas Carol bit. Maybe it's just an allergy or something. So the next day I'm coughing a little bit more and I'm thinking, hey, you know what? This may be the first cold I've had in 3 years. I haven't had a cold in 3 years. Now, over the Christmas weekend, I wasn't exactly feeling better, but I wasn't exactly getting worse. I just was settling into that place where I thought, okay, yes, now I know I'm sick. Now comes Monday, and it isn't so much a cough anymore as it's I can't take a deep breath, you know. So when I breathe in, it's like this pain in my chest. Now comes Wednesday, and now I know there's something bad going on because I can't even move. I can't walk up any stairs. I can't walk downstairs. I every time I get up to walk around, I feel like I've got double vision. So on Thursday, I went over to my doctor, and he says to me, I've seen 23 patients today. You're the sickest. And I said, so what does that mean? He said, well, let's take an x-ray. So he took an x-ray. I had pneumonia in both lungs. I had 103 temperature. I was all jacked up, man. I mean, it was not good. So this is a great doctor, Dr. Olt. He put me on antibiotics. He began to do this kind of respiratory therapy thing. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's like breathing smoke or something.
What are you talking about?
It's not breathing smoke. It's like you're breathing some kind of mist or something.
Yeah, like a cure, right?
Yeah, it'll help you. So he had me doing that, and there was a bunch of other stuff. He says to me, now I want to see you in a couple of days because this is pneumonia, Phil, and, you know, it's not exactly an outpatient thing, but maybe we can treat it that way. I said, fine. So over the next 2 days, because Christmas was one of the days, so he wasn't even, you know, he wasn't going to be in the office. And over the next couple of days, I took these antibiotics that he gave me, but I wasn't feeling any better. Now, by Saturday, which was the 2nd of January, and I was supposed to be back on the air in 2 days. I walk into his office. I almost fainted getting out of my car, almost passed out. And I walk into his office, and I'm laying there, and I said, you know, I think this is, you better start sizing me up for a box or something, man. So to make a long story short, he says, well, we're going to put you in the hospital. So that's what happened. And the next thing I know, I'm sitting in a wheelchair with that rubber tube coming out of my nose.
Are you putting me on?
No, man, that's what they do, you know.
Yeah, they got to put you in a wheelchair or they won't leave the hospital.
Well, they'll let you in a hospital if you're not in a wheelchair, but that's what they did. They stuck me in a wheelchair. I got that tube coming out of my nose like I'm Don Imus. And, yeah, funny. And they took me over to the hospital. So I'm laying there. Now, I'm 57 years of age, and I'm telling you the truth when I say this. I've never spent a night in a hospital in my life. Never. I've been to the emergency room, but I've never had to spend a night in a hospital. This is the first time in my life. And it happened like that, man. In other words, you can think you're indestructible. And I guess for a lot of my life, I've thought that way of myself. I've really abused my body, and that's just the way it is. You know, that's kind of how I've lived my life. And I've always felt that I had maybe a stronger constitution than most people, or I had a bigger capacity to put up with stress or what. I don't know why. It's some kind of an ego trip that you put yourself on. But sooner or later, man, you're going to get brought down. And, you know, I'd been burning the candle at both ends. I'd been staying up really late and in some instances not getting a whole lot of sleep at all. And so by the time the Christmas holiday rolled around, when this thing hit me, I went down like a lump of cement, man, like just a sack of cement. Boom. So they stick me in the hospital. And here is where I go on the 2nd of January. I'm supposed to be on the air in 2 days. Well, it ain't going to happen. And the first thing I do is I try to get an email out to everybody. Look, all of our business is on hold. I'm in the hospital. I got pneumonia. And now begins a one-week journey, which a lot of you guys have probably been through because maybe you've been in the hospital. I never have. So I wasn't familiar with the food. I wasn't familiar. Oh, my God, the television. And you know what? They're all hardworking people, the nurses, all of them, great people. But there's nothing that you can do if you work in a hospital. There's nothing you can do to make it any better than it is. It's not a good experience for anybody that's there. The food is just not going to ever be any good. Getting awakened at 3 o'clock in the morning so that they can take your blood pressure, it ain't never going to be any fun. And Criminal Minds? You know, I got to tell you something. I haven't watched over-the-air commercial television for a long time. Now, call me crazy, but I happen to think that watching television without commercials is more entertaining. I don't know. You know, to each his own. So I'm not really going to spend a whole lot of time watching the Thursday night lineup on CBS, ABC, or NBC, or any of those other networks. I just as soon watch movies on demand, you know, or something that might be a little bit different. So I said, well, what the hell, man, because I'm kind of captive here, so I'll start watching some of the TV. And for a solid week, man, I got a belly full of Criminal Minds, Law & Order, Southland, CSI. Are you kidding with that stuff or what? I mean, I'm being very honest with you when I ask the question, what is it about these shows? First of all, it's lousy writing. The acting is on the edge because these poor actors have to read these lines that they're given. The stories are incomprehensible and unbelievable. And this stuff is kicking ass. It's making all kinds of money. They got more viewers for that crap than they got for, like, The Godfather on HBO, which is, you know, 50 times more entertaining. But that's all I had to watch. I had that, and then I had one of the cheapest cons run on a cable viewer ever conceived, and that's AMC, American Movie Classics. Now, you guys that run that network, you are the laziest bunch of slobs. First of all, what are you, automated, man? You show your crappy 15, whatever it is, like 10 minutes of movie, then you break for a commercial, but you always break with the same promo, the same stupid tagline, the same stupid commercials. You come back with the same promo. It's like an automated TV station. So for a solid week, and I could be getting all of this wrong because, remember, I went in with a 103-degree temperature. So I might have been hallucinating all of this, especially when I turned on Hannah Montana on the Disney Channel. And I'm sitting there and I'm going, well, you know, this is pretty funny. Some of the writing on this is pretty good. Then, you know, when I told people that later, they went, boy, you were sick. I said, seriously? Yeah. What? Because you think Hanneman, well, I don't know. I mean, it seemed funny at the time. Well, no, it ain't. So I'm saying I'm digging Hannah Montana, Phineas and Ferb on the Disney Channel. I had no idea. All right. So in any event, now that's just the beginning, man. Wait till you hear as the week progressed through, and then I get out, and all of the personalities, all the people that I met in between. It was a week to remember. And then last week, man, I got out of the hospital. And the doctor says to me, oh, probably Tuesday or Wednesday you can be back to work. You really? Forget it. There's no way. No way. So, but I'll tell you, I'm glad to be back tonight because there is so much, obviously, in the news. And we've got a couple of special guests to talk about the Haiti crisis. And the Phil Henry Show is back. And if ever there was a show like ours needed, it's needed. And we have David G. Hall, I think, later.
Yeah, he's going to call up. He had a calling one of me.
All right, David G. Hall later in the hour here to be talking with us about, our show and the expansion of our show. Rush Limbaugh, I guess he's okay. The last I heard, Rush had a heart attack, but now I'm hearing that everybody's jumping on him about some comments about Haiti. So the world just doesn't stop for you, Henry. All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Henry Show. Still to come tonight, Margaret Gray and Bob Green.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show. It's the Phil Henry Show.
Back tonight here live on the Phil Henry Show at 877-876-PHIL. For your calls still to come tonight, we have Margaret Gray, the nationally syndicated newspaper columnist Bob Green of Fraser Foods. They'll be talking about Haitian relief. And, of course, we have a little bit later on, I believe, a visit from David G. Hall, who's our vice president of syndication. And I'm talking about what kept me off the air for the last couple of weeks. And I don't think it's too far afield of what's been in the news. Rush had problems. He had a...
He tried to kill himself.
No, he didn't. He had a heart attack, man.
Yeah, the heart, the other guy did.
Oh.
Tried to kill himself. Anyway, I had pneumonia, and I'm telling the story here because, first off, like I said, I've never been hospitalized. This was the first time in my life at the age of 57. I've been put in a hospital for a week, and the whole thing with pneumonia, like I said, it'll hit you like out of the blue. You don't even know until they say, get on that gurney because you're about to die, that you have it. And you're laying there, and in come nurses, respiratory therapists, doctors, and they're all wearing masks, which makes you wonder, why aren't I wearing a mask? What is it that they're afraid of breathing that I'm breathing, you know? What is in the air that they don't want any part of that I'm getting all I need, right, you know? And they're coming in, and, like I say, these stories have more to do with, probably are more interesting to those of you who've never been in hospital, but I'm telling you, when you're in a hospital, there comes a point where you want to get out. You want to get out bad. You'll do anything. You almost feel like breaking out. You almost feel like getting up, getting dressed, saying, okay, that's it. Oh, excuse me, sir. No, I'm all done. That's it, I'm done. Well, you can't just, oh, yes, I can just. Yes, I can. And I'm going. Because that's where, of course, the food is what it is. Now, the food starts out okay. I'm firmly convinced that any food is edible unless you have a whole lot of it, and then you suddenly believe that you're being poisoned, right? It could be airline food, hospital food. It could be your mother's cooking, for all you know how it was with your mom's cooking, right? What are we going to eat this for? You know, what can I go and get a hand? You'd rather eat a greasy hamburger down at some dump than your mother's good, clean cooking because you're just so sick of it, right? You think you're being poisoned by your mother. So it is with hospital food. But I can tell you, it's not that appetizing, and you guys at the hospitals, you know it, and it's nothing that you're proud of, but what are you going to do? You know, you guys weren't put on this earth to be chefs. You're here to cure people. So I finally had to call up one of my stepsons, Alex. I said, dude, you've got to go to Pollo Loco, man. I'm on it. What do you need? I got to get an 8-piece. I want to have the salsa. I want to have the thing. But man, I laid it out to him. He showed up with this El Pollo Loco, right? And there I am scarfing this stuff. And the food that they're serving me, I said, you know, you guys can just forget about, I can't eat it, you know.
Oh, you don't want to?
And I, how do I put this delicately? There's a certain kind of, well, shall we say, foreign person. And they go, oh, and you say, I don't really want the food. Oh, you don't want the food? No, I don't. Oh, right, I don't want the food, and it's slop, and you're trying to kill me with it. Oh, you think we're trying to kill you? Yeah. Oh, that's their way of saying, yeah, I need time to think, because you found us out. All right, anyway, so all of that was taken care of with the El Pollo Loco. And then the rest of it is simply every day you're waiting for the word. You know, the doctor comes in, he says, well, we took a look at your x-rays, Phil. Yep, another 48 hours. You're like, oh, man, you got pneumonia in both lungs. Now comes the final day, and here comes the doctor. This is the doctor of all doctors. He's the doctor of infectious diseases. He comes in. He's got the mask on. He's got the rubber gloves, and his fingers clasp each other in that manner that only surgeons would probably know what I'm talking about. You know, this is the kind of way that doctors hold their hands when they've been freshly scrubbed. And he's there and saying, hello, Phil, I'm Dr. Edwards. How are you? Well, I'm feeling really good. Well, I understand that. Now, let me tell you what you have. And he launched into the most unbelievable description of what he felt I had that I've ever heard in my life. He said the following. He said, Phil, I believe that what first struck you was swine flu. Yes, indeed, swine flu. Then what followed up was a pneumonia, a reactive pneumonia to the swine flu. The swine flu is gone, and now they treated you with the swine flu, but then you had pneumonia. And pneumonia there, and then I believe a fungal infection. That's right, a fungal infection, which is called valley fever. That
valley fever? What's that?
Come from the valley, right?
Yeah, it comes from the San Joaquin Valley. Good guess.
Well, everybody knows it comes from a valley.
It's the San Joaquin Valley, and basically it's just a fungus that gets stirred up from all of the dirt that they stir up in the farmland. Now, he wasn't sure that's what I had, but he thought possibly, because that's a thing that hits valley fever, right? I don't know what the hell that is. So I started out with swine flu.
So I think you had swine flu followed by a compounded pneumonia, which I understand is clearing up now, and the diddle-diddle-diddle-diddle-dee. And then I want to see you in a week. I want you to get a blood test.
Bang. Goodbye. Thank you. See you later.
And are you smoking?
Not anymore. I'm not. Which is another thing. I quit smoking.
Yeah, right.
You want to bet? I haven't had one in 3.5 weeks.
Yeah. As soon as you feel better, you will.
No, I believe you, man.
Thank you, Robert. 3.5 weeks I ain't had one. I'm done. Done with the cigarettes. Forget it. So I got to go back and see the doc here in a couple of days, and that's where that's at, you know. And I got out of the hospital, and oh, yeah, here's the best part. They leave you with 3 tanks of oxygen. So now here comes, you know, everything, you know, you almost see your life kind of, you're headed to the place where you figured you were going to be. Yeah, here I am with the plastic tube in the nose and the oxygen tank, and I might as well be like my grandfather, you know. And I'm walking to the car, and, oh, you hold on. We'll go get the car for you. Thank you very much. And I got the thing in my nose. Oh, my God. So I said, I got to start getting my wind back, because that's what pneumonia is, man. It's like you can't breathe, right? So I started doing deep breathing, and finally I'm starting, like, breathing on my own.
Are you wearing you're not wearing a tube now, are you?
No, man.
I don't. Do I look like I got a tube in my face?
No.
Then I ain't wearing the tube right now. Besides, we're on our video tonight. Oh, which reminds me, we are at www.philhendryshow.com. We're on our live video tonight. And we will have Margaret Gray coming up later. We have Bob Green coming up later. We have David G. Hall to be talking with us about a couple of things. And we'll talk with them next. As a matter of fact, at 877-876-PHIL. Let's see. A reminder as well that we have new affiliates on board tonight. We welcome them on at the beginning of the program. We're in Dallas, Wichita, Miami, live tonight in Miami, Richmond. Raleigh, Durham, Greensboro, Winston-Salem, a whole lot of places. We're really happy to be back on the air. So we got David G. Hall ahead. We'll talk about some of the stuff that's been in the news. Everybody's going ape about this Massachusetts race for the Senate seat of Ted Kennedy. Like, you know, like it means as much as they say it means. When they say that something is almost apocalyptic in its implications, when they say that something is almost biblical in its proportions, you can cut that in half, man. It ain't even close. And then we'll get into the Haitian relief efforts and whether or not you are a good enough American or a bad enough American when it comes to Haiti. And then we'll talk about the terror response and the fact that, you know, I support President Obama, but he's got to start getting a little bit more hard-ass with some of this stuff, okay? It's beginning to really wear thin. The whole America needs to look good thing is starting to look bad. Almost as bad as me. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry. This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, our number is 877-876-PHIL, and welcome back, world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And David G. Hall going to join us right now. David, Vice President of Syndication for our radio show. And it's some very strange news, David. I know in the broadcast world, as I was out, and you were talking to me earlier about this, but the story that troubled me the most was Artie Lang.
Yeah, Artie Lang, Phil, your audience may be aware, is a sidekick on the Howard Stern Show, and Artie stabbed himself.
Stabbed himself?
Yeah. About 9 times, and these are kind of... The reports were conflicting at first, but according to the police, his mother found him on the floor of his home on Saturday, and he had a 13-inch Wolfgang Puck kitchen knife. I know this sounds like a joke.
Yep. It almost sounds like a bit.
No, it's not. Artie Lang. And then Rush Limbaugh was rushed to the hospital. And this story, he ended his unaccustomed silence, announced that a medical test had revealed no heart disease. He was discharged from a hospital. I don't know where he was, but they thought he had. It was Queens Medical Center in Honolulu. After he experienced chest pains while vacationing in Hawaii, according to Limbaugh, doctors could not determine the exact cause of the pain. And both of these stories, Phil...
Oh boy, it's good news for Rush, though, and for Artie, that they're both still with us.
Yeah, that's true. But the bigger issue that I wanted to bring up to you, and that I'm sure your audience is probably maybe scratching their heads and wondering about, if both of these stories made national news... You were out with pneumonia for 2 weeks, and it did not make national news. And this is always very interesting for me, and I know it is for you, to determine and to look at the overall. Why are some things more newsworthy than others?
Yeah. Well, that's easy enough to answer.
All right.
Well, both of these were life-threatening situations.
Yeah, well, but you had pneumonia. Isn't that life-threatening?
Well, this is very dramatic. I mean, in one instance, Rush may have had a heart attack. You know, we don't know. Plus, Rush is a huge name.
Artie Lang is a huge name? You think Artie Lang's a huge name?
Well, he's on the Howard Show.
It doesn't matter. Is he a bigger name than you? The fact that he stabbed himself 9 times, should that be bigger news than you having pneumonia?
Yes, I think so.
Why?
Because he tried to kill him. I mean, should it be bigger news? It's more dramatic, and drama always wins, you know?
Drama always more dramatic. All right, I'm going to go with you on that. Artie Lang stabs himself. Rush Limbaugh says that he's got chest pains. Now, you had an opportunity, and I don't think the audience is going to be, against me on this. I think they're going to understand. You had an opportunity for 2.5 weeks to... And this is going to be a tough way to put it. I don't know how else to put it, but you could have helped along the disease a little bit.
What are you talking about?
To the point where you were... What I'm saying is to the point that you were on the edge of death.
Yeah, that you almost died.
See what I'm saying?
Are you telling me that I should have done what? I should have died?
No, did I say died? I said you're on the edge of death.
If you would have helped along the ammonia...
Yeah, it's not ammonia.
What are you talking about? How do I help along pneumonia?
I don't walk barefoot down a hall. It's something like that. But the point that I'm making, if you were you reading the paper this past week?
To be honest with you, no, I wasn't. I wasn't reading anything. I can't focus my eyes half the time. But what I was listening to in the news, I heard about the Rush thing. I don't understand what you're telling me. You're telling me that I should have tried to die.
I'm saying it would have been more dramatic had you try to die.
Yeah, with the ammonia.
Will you shut up, Bud?
Bud, shut up about ammonia. It's called pneumonia, okay?
Tell him to shut up.
I did. So, what if I did die?
What?
What if I did die?
You're not going to die. The point that I'm making here is Artie Lang, who is not a bigger name than you, made the national news because he stabbed himself. Limbaugh gets a chest pain, and you want to know why? Because he probably shoveled something down too fast for lunch. You know it as well as I do. It's probably indigestion. He gets national news. Why didn't you get national news? Because you weren't going to die. And the point that I made, and I think that the audience understands what I said, is the point that I made...
You know, you really ought to be careful about saying the audience understands, because I don't think they understand any more than I do.
Yeah, well, excuse me, but I think they do. The point I'm making is it's more dramatic if you almost die. And I was asking you, had you thought of that?
Had I thought about almost dying when I was in the hospital?
Yes, but given the fact that these two guys, Lang and this, what's the guy?
Limbaugh?
Yeah, Limbaugh almost, they almost kicked. I mean, Lang, he was found, right?
Yeah, you know, let's get off of talking about art. Obviously, that was a suicide attempt. Here's Rush Limbaugh with, he doesn't have heart disease. You might have been indigestion, like you were saying. So what's your point?
My point is, when you see these guys getting big headlines like this, why don't you try and do something that makes you almost dead?
Yeah, well, you could be close to dead, too.
Did he tell you to shut up?
Tell him to shut up, will you?
Get out of here, will you?
Get out of here, man.
I don't know how anybody in this world fools around with pneumonia to the point where I'm almost dead, but not quite. And by the way, how does the news get out?
What about what?
Suppose I am close to death from pneumonia. How does that news make it to ABC and TMZ.com?
Well, they got people. You know, they have people who'll be hanging around. You know, I don't know.
Oh, you don't know. So maybe if I walked barefoot down a hall and almost got myself killed from pneumonia and nobody from TMZ was hanging around, it wouldn't make the national news, and I'm just croaked.
Well, if you died, it would have made the national news. And that would have been, it's not going to be good for anything. But the fact is, as a lot of people know, that when a radio host dies, it does pop their ratings. But we don't want you to die, Phil.
Well, thank you.
You know, don't be so dramatic. What I'm trying to say to you...
You're the guy that's telling me to be dramatic. You're saying, couldn't you almost die? Artie Lang almost died. Howard Stern almost died. Or Rush Limbaugh almost died.
I didn't say Howard Stern, did I?
Rush Limbaugh, I said.
No, you said Howard Stern.
I said Rush Limbaugh. You said Limbaugh almost died. I'm just telling you that I don't know any way that a guy can almost croak from pneumonia consciously, walk right up to the edge, and then pull himself back.
Well, the fact that it didn't even enter your mind, that's the part that worries me.
What worries you about that? The fact that I'm not thinking about making headlines because I'm sick?
Yes, exactly. Every opportunity in your life is an opportunity for a headline. Limbaugh makes a headline, and what has he got? He's got a gas pain. He, you know, to be perfectly honest, he probably busted one in a limousine that liked to set you free, and it made headlines. People thought it was a heart attack. That's how bad it was. And it
busted one in a limousine.
That's right. And then Lang, they find him. But these are the things, Phil, that I'm glad you're well, and I'm glad you're out. I'm just saying, these are things that you ought to be thinking about.
Well, you know something, David? If you've ever been in a hospital bed with pneumonia, you ain't thinking about nothing other than getting better, okay?
And that's why Artie Lang is in the headlines and you ain't.
Because Artie Lang decided to stab himself 9 times because he knew he'd make the headlines. I think you're crazy, man.
No, I'm not saying that. You want to be dramatic. I'm saying that when he was suicidal, he probably thought, well, at least this will get a headline. But I don't know.
No, you don't know, man. You don't know. You're just fooling around with, concepts. They're just kind of flying around in your head. You don't know. And the fact that I was sick in a bed with pneumonia for 2 weeks, and I'm supposed to be thinking about how I can maximize that for publicity.
Oh, well, excuse me.
Well, no, but I mean, the fact is, you don't talk about me not thinking.
Oh, excuse me. I didn't want to, offend your delicate sensibilities. Pardon me. Oh, man. So what were you doing for 2 weeks laying in a hospital bed if you weren't thinking about how to maximize it for publicity? You're watching Criminal Minds and Hannah Montana, and you're thinking, boy, what great writing that is.
I was half out of my mind with a fever, okay?
Well, if you're half out of your mind with a fever, how about thinking about getting some ink? God!
he was mad.
Oh, he's an idiot. How about thinking about getting some ink? Hey, Artie, I'm glad you're going to be okay, man. What the hell is wrong with you? And Limbaugh, same thing for you, Rush. And I'm sweating here, man. I'm sweating. Anyway, 877-876-PHIL. As long as you're going to be laying in bed with pneumonia, why don't you think about how you can maximize it for publicity, like almost dying?
Yeah, but that's when Rush Limbaugh almost did it, too. And he almost died, man, yeah.
He didn't almost die. He had a chest pain, for crying out loud. Like I said, it was probably something having to do with indigestion. Who knows? All right, coming up, we have Margaret Gray. We have Bob Green. We'll get into the situation vis-a-vis Haiti. We're also going to talk about elections. You know, there's one in Massachusetts that people are going a little haywire over. This is one for the United States Senate seat that had been occupied by Teddy Kennedy. And a whole lot of other stuff, okay? So we'll get into it. This is the only world, the only news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. This is Through the Looking Glass every night, the world famous Phil Henry Show.
Phil Henry. World-famous Phil Henry Show.
And we are live tonight and every night from, you know, from whenever till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, with a whole bunch of new affiliates tonight, as well as, of course, our website there, very faithfully, www.philhenryshow.com. Now, we tell you that because you can hear the show on live streaming audio on our website every night. You can download that show the next day. If you did not hear it the night before, you can go and say, oh, I missed the show last night. Let me go download it. Boom, there it is. You can also watch a five-day archive of video. That is, for 5 days, we hold on to the archives of our video cast of the show. So, for instance, tonight, we are video casting, as we do every night that we're live. And I am coming down from a horrific pneumonia disease, and you can see me sweating, and I look like something out of the Heart of Darkness right now.
What's that about?
No, what's happening?
I'm sorry, it's a reference to a movie or to a novel. Never mind.
Yeah, see, that's the whole thing with you, with the obscure and everything.
Oh, don't give me that bull crap about the Dennis Miller thing.
Yeah, just you and Miller.
Why? Because I said Heart of Darkness? Look, I'm going to say what I'm going to say, so forget it, okay?
Is that about Africa? Because if it is...
Oh, what? Am I racist?
No, I just wondered.
Yeah, it's about Africa. God.
Well, yeah, it's about a white man that goes black.
No, it doesn't, man.
Will you just shut up? Nonetheless, so check out our video cast at philhenryshow.com. Thanks for nothing, you guys. Screwing me up.
Well, you're the one that brought it up.
I brought up Heart of Darkness. You guys are talking about, is it about Africa? Yeah, it's about a white guy that goes black.
Yeah, well, that's what I heard it's about.
All right, so it is. Whatever, I don't know. It's about a guy that loses his civilized roots. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of, in other words, it's like Harry Reid. Now, anyway.
Oh, he's going to hate you for that.
Oh, Harry's got himself dug so deep. Poor Harry. You know what? If you're a white man, you're a white man. I don't give a damn if you're a Democrat or a Republican. Just like if you're a black guy, you're a black guy. See, if you're a white guy, you're an idiot. You say stuff like, well, he ain't got that Negro dialect. If you're a black guy, you say stuff like, black hole, are you being a racist? See? So they got stupid jackasses on both ends of this marvelous spectrum of ours. All right. The Golden Globes, ratings up, Gervais reviews down. Why? He was funnier than hell. He was the best thing about the show. Anyway, NBC saw its telecast of the Golden Globes Awards draw nearly 17 million viewers on Sunday, a 14% jump from 2009, and a victory for the troubled network because they couldn't find a winner if they used both fingers, despite a poorly reviewed performance by host Ricky Gervais. Well, whatever that means, because you know something, television writers, television critics are, there's only a group, the only group that I can think of that's worse in terms of their perception and their ability to actually review, broadcast anything, that would be radio writers. So, don't worry about it, Ricky. In any event, the 3-hour film and television award show was number one during its 8 to 11 p.m. Sunday night time slot for NBC, which is in last place in ratings among the four major U.S. networks, if you haven't heard, and that's been true for about the last 10 years. NBC said on Monday, the early figures indicate the telecast drew 16.9 million U.S. viewers compared to 14.9 million last year. The Golden Globes, organized by the Hollywood Foreign Press, also saw a 10% ratings, whatever the hell. All right, so let's get to the real good stuff. Robert Downey Jr. gives arguably the best acceptance speech of the night after winning the best actor in a comedy or musical. It's not important what that was.
If you start playing violins, I will tear this joint apart. First of all, I'd like to thank Susan Downey for telling me that Matt Damon was going to win, so don't bother to prepare a speech. That was at about 10 a.m. I don't have anybody to thank. I'm sorry, everyone's been so gratuitous. It was a collaboration. We all did this together. Certainly not going to thank Warner Brothers, Alan Horn, and my God, Robinoff, these guys. They needed me. Avatar was going to take us to the cleaners. If they didn't have me, we didn't have a shot, buddy. What am I going to do? Thank Joel Silver. The guy's only restarted my career 12 times since I began in 25 years ago. I mean, I really don't want to thank my wife because I could be bussing tables at the Daily Grill right now if not for her. Jesus, what a gig that'd be.
No, that's Robert Downey Jr. That's great. And now here is host Ricky Gervais. He was criticized by this series of jokes that some called insensitive, given that Haiti, earthquake and all that stuff. And of course, they were wrong. He was funny.
It is an honor to be here in a room full of what I consider to be the most important people on the planet. Actors. They're just better than ordinary people, aren't they? We all know that. But actors aren't just loved here in Hollywood. They are loved the world over because they're recognisable. You can be anywhere. You could be in the third world, okay, and you get a glimpse of a Hollywood star and it makes you feel better, okay? You could be a little child, a little Asian child with no possessions and no money, but you see a picture of Angelina Jolie and you think, oh, mummy.
Perfect. That's perfect. There's nothing wrong with that. Haiti, he was talking about an Asian kid. He purposefully said Asian so that nobody would confuse him with Caribbean, but that, you know, let's not let the facts confuse anything. Now here we have Gervais poking fun at... This is funnier than hell.
Yeah, but his voice cracked.
It doesn't matter if his voice cracked. This is funny. Here is Ricky Gervais poking fun at Mel Gibson last night. In this clip, Gervais is holding on to a glass of beer before introducing Gibson.
How you doing, all right? Cheers. I've had a couple. I'm not going to lie to you. Now, listen up. I hope I haven't offended anyone. I didn't mean... It's not my fault. It's a lot of powerful people here, so if I said... It's... Honestly, I like a drink as much as the next man. Unless the next man is Mel Gibson.
See, his voice cracked, though.
Who cares if his voice cracked? I like a drink as much as the next man, and just the next man is Mel Gibson. Very funny. All right, so that was last night's Golden Globes. Meanwhile, another entertainment news. If there are any doubts that Avatar would post the biggest total box office numbers of all time, they were erased this weekend. Yes, by a just quick dash of a pencil and an eraser, they fudged the numbers. No, I'm kidding. With a decline of only 15% in the U.S. and Canada over the Martin Luther King Day weekend, a $54.5 million four-day domestic growth, and this thing's kicking ass. It is a blockbuster, baby. It's James Cameron's 3D blockbuster, and it surpassed his other film, Titanic, which he set all kinds of records with 11 years ago. Now, the interesting thing about Avatar is the losers that go to see this movie, and I shouldn't say loser. I'm sure, you know, people get a kick out of it. Good for them, all right? But there are some people that are, I mean, really need to find something in the way of a life, either take out an ad, find it in a recycler, something. Because they're going through Avatar depression because the world just isn't as beautiful as it is in the movie. Are you ready for that?
What?
The movie, Avatar.
Yeah, people don't want it. They want that blue thing.
That ain't just a blue thing, man. They want the whole world. The world just isn't as groovy as it is in Avatar, and they're bumming. What does Sherlock Holmes mean? Anyway, 11 years ago, ticket prices were a lot cheaper. The most recent estimated average ticket was $7.46 compared with $4.69 in 1999. That's bullcrap because I went to the movies in 1999 and I knew it was $7.50 back then. All right, let's listen now as we hear two psychiatrists talking like blithering idiots about Avatar depression and how these cats that go see this movie walk out of there and they look at the stark, horrible world around them and they just can't take it anymore.
I think the depression is widespread enough that it is an actual phenomenon. There were over 1,000 posts on how to deal with post-Avatar depression on one of the Avatar fan forums. And that's just one of many fan forums where people have gotten together to talk about how they felt, just like that one commenter said, very depressed. They felt like the world was gray and flat after waking up after seeing Avatar.
The world was gray and flat after waking up after seeing Avatar. Now here's a psychotherapist.
Well, here's what I parallel to, because we see this phenomenon all the time. You see somebody go to a romance movie and they walk away and they're not with Prince Charming and they don't have a person like that, and so they have a bit of depression. I think that's a piece of it. I don't think it's about the movie. I think that people are forced to look at what's going on in their own lives, and if it isn't the euphoric dream that they were hoping for, that they end up depressed.
You know, okay. What I really think? I think that anybody that walks out of Avatar depressed, you know, this euthanasia discussion we've been having, those people are candidates for euthanasia right there.
Yeah, that makes sense to me.
You know, forget about this other discussion. Anybody depressed after Avatar, kill them.
Phil Hendry.
Margaret Gray next.
Kill her.
Learn more at talkradionetwork.com.